Hello, this is James Shramko from internetmarketingspeed.com, and I'm talking with John Carlton. How are you today, John?
Very good, very good. Nice to be here, James.
It's always good to talk when we get the chance because I always learn so much, and that is because you are touted as the world's greatest living copywriter. True or false?
You know, I'm kind of a shy, reserved guy. I leave the big bombast to other people. I prefer calling myself the most ripped off and respected writer online because I can back that up. And it's the highest form of praise. So if people are hunting down my stuff, stalking my ads, and carefully paying attention to what I do and mimicking the things that I do, then I consider that the highest form of praise.
Awesome. Yeah, and I'm pretty sure it's safe to say that people have been ripping off some of your stuff, especially the one-legged golfer headline. I think is that one of the most famous things you've been credited for?
Yeah, it's I say we're going back 15 years. It's at least 15 years old, and it was a direct mail piece, and it was in magazines, in the golf magazines. Caused an enormous ruckus in the golf magazines and was picked up as a example of what not to do by certain people until it kept running over and over and over again, and then immediately flopped over to, wait a minute, what's this guy doing? And then it kind of, right about then, the web hit and things kind of exploded. And it's been used. I've been at several of my colleagues' big seminars, Gary Benzavinga's big $5,000 seminar a few years ago in New York City. That was one of the first ads he popped up, and you use it as an example of how to do a hook. And Clayton Makepeace used it too in his big $5,000 seminar and another. So I can't get away from that ad. And it of course is just one of a pantheon of ads like that. Once I realized what the hook was all about and started digging into it, I spent more than a decade perfecting it, and then the next decade teaching people how to do it. So that it's almost as satisfying to teach someone how to do it and to see that light bulb go off and kind of change the way they're doing things, and so that the next call I have with them, you know, their life really does start to get fun when they start to get the results in and stuff. You know, James, with you, you came up and you kind of apologized the first time we met. You thrashed copywriting in a speech, and I took you aside and we talked about it, and then we had that first interview, and it was wonderful to talk to somebody who was just realizing just point by point how important this stuff was. And I don't think I changed your life dramatically, but it certainly changed the way you looked at an essential part of the marketing process. And, you know, that is just extremely gratifying.
Well, it gave me a sort of system that I could now look at the stuff that I was already doing, some of them, but it gave me names. I didn't know it was called a hook. I wasn't.
Right.
I think one of the biggest things that I've really taken from it was especially bullets. The way that you teach bullets, I think, has been the pinnacle of the industry. And once you have the bullets, I've now learned that gives you just about everything else around it, the headline and the whole story, if you like. Those bullets are so powerful. And they can be used everywhere from pay-per-click ads, opt-ins, and sales pages. I've got a special challenge for you today, and I'm not sure if you're up to it or not, because it's probably going to be a little bit out of your comfort zone.
Oh, okay, great.
Now, what I have learned about copywriters is that, apart from being a little bit crazy, they like to mull over things and digest information and process it and move it around a bit and then come back with something that looks pretty good. But I want to put you on the spot a little bit. I've gone out and surveyed my readers and asked them what's their biggest question that they would ask John Carlton, and I've actually had over 100 responses to it. And rather than, put them into three or four salient points, which is what I'm sure that you would probably prefer me to do, I'd rather try and cover quite a lot of questions, but sort of more like a speed dating thing. You know, if I could get the questions up there, and I sort of, what I'm really looking for is is the John's instant reaction type answer, the straight out of your head, rapid fire, like you would do with a hot seat. And I know you love hot seats.
Oh, yes.
Are you up to it?
Very much so. Yes, I am very much. And just before we start, I want to apologize to anybody. I don't know if anybody heard it, but I'm working at home today, of course. I have a home office, and I'm surrounded by my dogs, and the big Afghan was right next to me for the first part of this call, breathing heavily. So if anybody picked it up, that's my dog. The other one is down here cleaning itself. So it's hilarious. I love working at home. It's one of the big advantages to having a gig where you are in control of everything. So just if you guys hear any barking or anything, it's just part of working at home. So
you're not doing the heavy breathing yourself there.
it was funny. The Afghan just came in and said, you know, and in his eyes, it's like, I don't know how many people out there love dogs, but you know, I'm a big dog fan. And he just, hey, you're on the phone. Hey, can I get in on this? He said, no, you can't. You go chase the cat or something. And it was just pretty funny. So.
I imagine imagine your dog is very highly trained in the art of copywriting if sitting in on these interviews.
They are very persuasive animals. If not copyright, certainly in salesmanship. So, yes, they're in the place. So.
Well, I'm going to jump into this. Firstly, what's more important, injecting character, storytelling, or learning the ways of an NLP ninja?
If by character you mean personality... I'd say personality and storytelling are right up there. And in my mind, it's hard to have a good personality without telling stories. Now, I'm biased. I come from a storytelling family. My whole career has been based on storytelling. And it's hard to be able to be a good storyteller without having some personality behind it. As far as the NLP stuff, you know, I have a degree in psychology. It's essentially worthless. It's an undergraduate degree from the early 70s. But I knew a lot about psychology, and I came out of the academic view of psychology, but fell in love with the street level view of psychology when I started dealing with salesmen and started dealing with more fundamental ways of dealing with stuff, the basic ways of influencing people and persuading people and things like that, which have nothing to do with academic psychology. NLP was created after I had gotten out of college, and while it's got a lot going for it, most of the ways that people think they're applying it as quote-unquote magic in their ads is really just basic salesmanship that predates NLP by centuries and maybe millennia. You know, it goes all the way back to the dawn of civilization when, you know, the first cavemen started selling things to other cavemen. So I would say NLP is, being an NLP ninja is not even in the mix. And I say that as a guy who respects and loves NLP. And I think that you can get lost down that rabbit hole. And I think that personality and storytelling both are the tools that you really want to keep as your first choice weapons in your toolkit.
Awesome. Yeah, I really like that answer too. And also for anyone really curious about NLP, I know that a lot of it was based around Ericksonian hypnosis, and that Ericksonian stuff was more or less a form of problem solving. So it's sort of interesting that it finds its way into sales conversations.
And Erickson's pedigree goes back to like William James, who was, you know, essentially the first psychologist. So goes into that whole idea of, you know, they didn't invent looking at the human mind or human behavior. What they did was codify it. They made it into something you could actually, they gave it a language you could talk about. So before that, streetwise salesmen, and even today, you can find guys who are going door to door that will sell you things you didn't even know existed 2 seconds ago, and you can't realize how you lived without it before. Know nothing about NLP, about anything, but they just do it. So there's a big difference between suddenly discovering something and realizing that something has been given a language that is actually very, very ancient and part of our DNA. All of us have an inner salesman hiding inside. For the majority of people, he is fast asleep and will never awaken in your life, except for the few instances you bring it up. If you're married, you sold somebody on liking you enough to get married. If you have a job that you had to go to an interview for, you sold yourself to an interviewer. All of us sell, but for the most part, that inner salesman is not woken up and made an essential part of your life. The guys who Erickson and the guys who kind of formed that language of persuasion psychology realized that they didn't call it salesmanship; they called it persuasion and influence and things like that. And in effect, those words were kind of brought into the language, and it's really just salesmanship. So that clears up a lot for a lot of people who think there's some murky voodoo going on with salesmanship, and it's not. It's merely winning friends and influencing people and being persuasive in a way that gets your point across and closes the deal. Okay, that was a little longer than a speed dating thing, but
that's good. That's one question down. 99 to go. Now I'm gonna be firm with you on this. All right, so this one, I'm just dying to know your answer to this, and I've been observing what you've been doing lately because I like to see what you're doing, not just what you say, but what are your thoughts on the video sales letter? Do you have any data on long form versus video? Because I think this question comes up over and over again. We have seen a big awareness about video. We've seen a huge product launch around video. We see video on sales pages now. Tell me your thoughts about this.
Well, these guys are all good buddies of mine. In fact, I'm talking with Andy Jenkins tomorrow, the guy from, what was it called?
Video Boss.
And I just chatted with him, and he and I are on record. We've actually recorded long calls about how to write for video and how video is just another medium for the sales message. Now, when you get involved in long copy versus short copy, long video versus short video, things like this, it's the wrong way to ask the question. Basically, the question you need to ask is, how long will it take me to get my point across? And by point, I mean to be able to tell people who I am, what I've got, and why I'm the person they should deal with, and why they should get this now, and close the deal. So when you start out from kind of introducing, hooking people's attention, introducing them to the deal, working your way through it, getting all the points down, and then actually having that action, that transaction happen where he takes money out of his wallet, metaphorically through a credit card, or actually takes dollars out and gives money that was once his to you, so now it's yours, and the deal is over. If you can do that in a very, very short period of time, either a short piece of writing, a short video, or a short anything, then do it. That's what you should do. If it will take you longer to get across all your points and to get that process going, then you need to use the longer forms. As far as the video sales letter, the one that's working right now is a combination of the video with the written text below, either the transcript or the approximate text that comes along with it. So you're bombarding the prospect with visual stimuli, with auditory, and with reading, which is different than the visual of the video. I've seen some people run videos of the sales letter. So there's a number of different ways to do it. And what you are trying to do is engage the person, the reader or the prospect, I guess we'll call him, engage him on a multi-sensory level. And I love video, but video, even if you're speaking it out, needs a script. You can't just, you don't sell through a video because you got a camera and you turn on the camera. Years ago, just to tell you one quick anecdote, Gary Halbert and I were doing a hot seat seminar, and we noticed like three seminars in a row. These were very expensive seminars back in the early 90s. And people, we had them down in Key West, Florida, and people came from all over the world to things, paid a lot of money and came down. And every time we'd have one guy, and this was the early 90s, his question would be, I just bought the most souped up computer available on the market, which back then was a PC. And he said, and the question is, how do I make money now using it? And we would just, we'd look at them for a while, blink, and we'd laugh. It's like the computer isn't going to make money. It's the sales process. It's the message. It's what you have to write. If you got a guy with all the tech in the world against who can't sell against a salesman with a pencil and a dirty bar napkin, and the bet is which one is going to close the deal with the next prospect. Bet on the guy with the pencil and the dirty bar napkin because he knows how to sell. All the technology in the world and all the gimmicks and stuff, that isn't going to help you at all. So video is just another medium, another vehicle for getting your point across, for getting your message across, for engaging and bringing them on. I happen to love it. I love video. We're using it, but we don't want to let people who need to read. Some people like to read while they're listening to the video. Other people like to watch the video and then read it, and some people just want to read. You know, give them multiple opportunities to engage the sense that they are best. Or not best, they are more comfortable with. And remember, this all gets back to, James, the idea that when you're trying to sell something, it's a lot different than, say, going on YouTube and watching the cat fall off the counter, the funny videos. That's a passive behavior. Reading and watching TV and watching videos and listening to the radio and even listening to people talk, those are passive behaviors. If you're going to sell something, you have to bring your prospect out of that passive state and put him into an active state. That's why we use, shock and awe tactics. That's why, you'll wake them up, rattle their cage. That's why we talk about, doing this in headlines and having copy that brings them out of their kind of sleepiness and into this state where of active desire, of active, yes, I want this. I want it now. You're the guy I want it from. Here's my money. You're pushing them to that point. You can't do that in a sleepy kind of way. I use the example, when I'm speaking in a seminar, I say, how many people watched a YouTube video that made them laugh and they sent it off to someone else? And everybody raises their hand. I said, now how many people after that made you laugh and you sent it off to somebody else, how many people sent a dollar to the person who made the video? And nobody raises their hand. Making people laugh, even getting a million, views on YouTube won't get you rich. In fact, it won't make you anything at all. On the other hand, a targeted video that understands how to deliver the sales message you want to deliver, wake people up, get them into an active state of desire where they realize that you're the guy they want to deal with and want to do this now and close the deal. That is, that's essentially what we're talking about here. So all the other questions about short versus long and all this stuff, people should remember Mike Koenigs, of Traffic Guys, he just did an hour and a half video with Kern. They just sitting there in front of the camera. And it got huge hits, and it got a lot of action. Frank Kern himself, going back to another guy who's pioneered the use of video, uses multiple, often short videos. When you put them all together, so the pitch, the actual sales process or the sales message, may be a combination of 2 weeks of short videos all put together, maybe 6 or 7 hours long. So that's the process. So no individual one actually closed the deal. It was all part of a well-thought-out, well-planned campaign that did incremental stages as you're going. So, you can't look at any single short video that maybe closed the deal or maybe was part of the deal and saying, that's what I need to do. You need to look at the overall process. And again, I went way over the short answer thing. But it's necessary to understand this. This trips so many people up. But it's worth a lot.
All I can say is, wow! I mean, this is you've just. I'm going to actually summarize what you just said, then, to make sure that I understand this and that our audience understand this. You've more or less said, and in one sweeping answer, you've covered probably half the questions that people have asked. You've more or less said that whatever combination is required to get your message across is the right one, and it's going to always come back to having some kind of a sales script, and that it should be as long as it needs to be, whether that's short or long.
Right.
Is that more or less what you said?
That is, yes. And this is where either experience will help or getting some coaching, or in learning how the guys who know, this is visceral with me. This just... you know, when I look at something now after 30 years in the trenches, you know, when I look at something and I think, how would I sell this? I kind of get an idea how long I'm going to need if I was put face to face with somebody. Now I may be off by a bit, but I know what I'm going to go through. And it's seldom a couple of sentences or a very short thing. It's going to take a few minutes to half an hour. You know, it's you know, somewhere in there's that sweet spot. But I know it. You know, I get an idea. For a rookie going out there, you know, to choose, how do I do this? How many videos? What do I do? It's going to take a little longer. So it's really good to hook up with people who share their experience or share the, you know, who are able to coach you a little bit. So you can, you know, you have somebody to bounce off of, somebody to watch your back and use the mastermind principle and, you know, buddy up with people and all that type of thing until you start to be able to trust your gut or trust, you know, if you've got the right idea or not. You know, before that, if you are on your own, I mean, James, you're a shining example of a guy who's kind of alone when you first started out. You didn't have a lot of people to watch your back. In fact, I think you were doing it pretty much on your own. And you tested. You let the market tell you as quickly as possible. So there are ways to use the market as your backup buddy, you know, or as you're testing things out. You're getting real world results, you know, and so adjusting as you go. But you do all that critically. So as you go through that, realize that wow, that didn't work. Yet when I changed it and I spent more time, or I did an extra video, or I took one video out, or I did this, and you're constantly kind of looking at this thing and trying to make it as smooth and easy as possible, then you start to get a feel of how long that's going to be. But if you watch the top guys, the guys who do the multi-million-dollar launches, the guys who are using video and copy and a number of different ways, you know, an email, and they're using all this, look at it critically. Don't think, I can't do that, because you can. It's there's no magic out there. It's just the application of solid salesmanship. And if there are differences in the way we do it today rather than the way we did it, say, a year ago or 18 months ago, it's because of, you know, small changes in technology that have allowed us to get more back to basic salesmanship. In other words, video wasn't viable until more people had computers than didn't that could actually, you know, receive a video and run it, and it was more high speed access, and you know, there were multiple ways to be able to post videos, because there was a lot of problem with videos before. You had to wait for them to load, the buffering would interrupt every, you know, 30 seconds, things like that. And a lot of those problems are going away, to the point that it is now not just viable but a preferred method. And it's not because somebody invented it, it's because the technology caught up with the potential of video online. By this time next year, it'll be a no-brainer to use video in a lot of things because of the complete and utter lack of obstacles to using video. However, all that does is open up the potential for using video in the best way possible, which means delivering the exact kind of sales message you need to deliver in conjunction with the other basic sales processes, which will always include text in some way. I mean, we don't have audio-visual email yet. You know, people are experimenting with it. I'm not so sure that will ever work. I mean, you pop open an email and somebody is speaking to you, that may work, that may go okay, but right now you can scan a short, crisp email with a link to get somewhere very, very quickly, and that's the, you know, I don't see video overtaking that, or audio. There's a lot of problems with audio on radio, because when you give the phone number or the URL that you want people to go to, they have to memorize it or write it down or do something. There's no visual way of storing that information, although maybe we'll get past that. That would save radio if there's a way to just click something on your dashboard as you're going along and it copies a phone number or you know, copies a URL, but we don't have that yet, so that's an obstacle. So we're working all this stuff out, and it's driving the technology. You know, video may have stayed at early, early non-HD, you know, more or less primitive stages if marketers hadn't really pushed for better and better marketing or better and better uses of video very quickly, you know, loading faster, all that stuff. So,
and I went down in there. I'm going to say, even with the pure video sales letter stuff, like Frank Kern, what people sometimes forget is that they got an email, they got a text email that tells a story before they even click on it, framing that video. And I think what I'm picking up here is that you've got to know how to put together a sales message, whether it's video or text. You've got to know what the structure is or what the system is.
You're always going to start out with text, James. You're always going to start out with text. Kern started out, and it may be notes. It may be a page just scattered with notes, maybe mind maps, maybe all kinds of things. And it may not be the exact words you use, but it's going to be close to a script.
And this, when he sends out a monthly package, he'll send a DVD and a newsletter. And I'm pretty sure the newsletter gets more dog-eared than the cellophane wrapper coming off the DVDs.
And passed around, and it's there for easy access and a lot of things. So, yeah, I think we beat this horse to death. So.
And you're right, too. It's so much easier to scan an email than to listen to a video, you know, if you're in the coffee shop or on an airplane or something.
Well, even as I was saying that, though, I can't wait for audio-visual emails. I mean, you know, it's going to open up. I mean, imagine if even at the subject line, I mean, you say, hey, here's an email from, or they won't even call it email anymore. They'll call it AV mail or something. They go, hey, here's an AV from Schramko. I wonder what he's got to say. And you punch it, and you actually speak out the subject line, and then it goes to a quick, you know, picture of you, and you're doing something crazy on the beach. You just got out from swimming and stuff. I can see there's some great stuff in there, and then there's actually still a link in there. I can see, I mean, anybody can see the potential for this. Whether or not it pans out is going to be an experiential thing, but, you know, we all love the way technology has made the delivery of basic salesmanship easier and easier and easier.
Great. So it's not so much whether it's text or video or long or short, it's the message and knowing how to structure it. I think that's really the core of this. And V-mail has been around for like 3 years, but I don't think it's really taken off yet for whatever reason.
It's probably part of the delivery system. I mean, I know it's been around, but it's not, I don't know anybody that uses it or gets it or...
Well, the only people I know that use something similar are blind people. They get their emails talked out to them. And then there's some Twitter technology and stuff. You know, you can leave little voice messages. We're going to move on to the next one is, do you have any specific tips for writing squeeze pages in particular? Is it any different to a standard sales letter page?
Okay, this is, I'll try to make this as brief as possible. Every step of the way in a sales process and in any kind of human interaction where you are trying to influence the behavior, if you're trying to get somebody to marry you, you know, you can't say, you know, Susie married me because I got on one knee in a fancy restaurant and offered her a ring and asked her to marry you. It's that plus the 6 months prior that you were wooing her and doing all this stuff, right? So phrase the question again real quick.
What are your best tips for... writing copy for a squeeze page.
Squeeze pages. Ah, I forgot. So the point is, at each point you're selling somebody, a headline sells you to say, okay, I'm going to see what else you got. Subhead, so a headline sells you into the subhead sells you into the first paragraph of the letter, the first paragraph of the letter sells you into the rest, the opening shots of a video sells you into, you know, sitting there watching the next few seconds of the video that sell you into the next few, and a squeeze page. So the point I'm trying to get across is that try to make your sales efforts little nuggets of salesmanship where you're trying to move people along incrementally rather than trying to get everything done all at once. So a squeeze page, you have one thing you're trying to sell, and people often fall off the edge of this and they get all confused. You want a name and an email. And that's all you want. So that is the job of the squeeze page. It's not to give a tease of what's coming up. It's not to try to do a shortcut sales pitch. It's not to try to make them love you. It's to get them to the point where they say, okay, let's see what you got.
I love that.
And that's a lot easier than trying to squeeze you know, a lot of people try to do the squeeze pay. They try to make the mini sales and stuff. You're not trying to sell anything. You're selling. You're not trying to make a sales transaction. You are selling them on the idea merely of agreeing to go to the next stage, which is leave your name and email, in which case then the dance can get going in earnest.
Got it. And it's exactly the same when I was in the car business. People used to try and sell a car over the phone, and I used to just sell the appointment. And at the appointment,
right,
I would sell the test drive. On the test drive, I would then sell the car. So
right.
I love how you've articulated that. Just be aware of what you're trying to sell at each step, and don't try and overdo it because you risk missing the point altogether.
Right. Okay. And the perfect squeeze page, by the way, will vary. I've seen some that are, you know, multiple scrolls long, but they're putting in testimonials, or they're telling stories, or they're doing something because they feel they are up against a lot of noise, or that their lack of personal awareness in that market is a strike against them. So they're trying to cover a few things. So just understand what the obstacles are you need to obliterate to get the person to say, okay, here's my name and my email. And it may be a lot, or it may be very little. So to your house list, or to a list that has been introduced to you, if somebody says, hey, you should really pay attention to this guy, go check this out, and they wind up at a squeeze page, very, very short, brief, sign in, look at this. You can do it with a video, you can do it with script, you can do whatever, but you're only trying to get that one thing happening. So, yeah, okay.
Love it. Okay, here's a complete curveball. What time management system have you created to keep you focused and on track to meet a boatload of copywriting decisions and deadlines?
Somebody is under some deadlines there. Well, I had a famous saying that Dan Kennedy picked up and a lot of other people picked up years and years ago. And I was speaking to someone, and I just said the deadlines are the best invention man has ever come up with. And and I'm speaking as a freelancer at that point, because without deadlines, and this is true of artists too, without deadlines, nothing's ever finished. A deadline forces you to finish something, even if you just, you know, say, drop your pen and say, I'm done, that's it, or you hit send on the computer and you send the manuscript over, or whatever. Without deadlines, you are at the mercy of an ambiguous, vague finishing line that doesn't exist. And if you talk to a guy, say a novelist who has been working 10 years on a novel, you know, it's because he doesn't have a deadline. Some of the best writers of novels and of ads in the world are very prolific, and they just get this stuff out. And a lot of them are prolific because they sign contracts and they try to get a book out a year, or they get an ad out every month, or they do two ads every month.
So what system would you use to stick to deadlines?
Well, I actually have a course I put together called the Freelance Course, and it was all about deadlines. So I can't give a quick answer to that, but basically you got to find out what works for you. You got to find out what you're capable of doing. But I will say, just to give some ideas, and this is not sacred. This is not true for everybody. For me, 2 manuscript pages a day, and that would be finished and edited manuscript pages, which is about, if it's online, probably 4 screen pages, is good.
Awesome.
And I'd be very happy with that. 2 to 4 hours of writing in single hour breaks, in total quiet, no music playing, and not trying to push it, and knowing when I'm tired, and also using sleep. I mean, I could go on for a day here, James, but basically some of the best writers around have used sleep. I will pump my head full of research. I don't sit down to write until I know where I'm going. I don't try to make it up as I go. I kind of know where I'm going, and I've done my research. I know the audience I'm writing to. I know what points I'm trying to get across, and I've kind of knocked out, you know, most of the pro writers knock out sales pieces or messages in chunks. You don't sit down and start with word one and end the last word and hit end and you're finished. I will write the bullets first, for example. And then from the bullets, as we even said at the beginning of this call, the headline often will come up and things like that. But I will often write the bullets and get all this stuff down and then go take a nap, a half-hour nap, and I have a pad of paper and a pencil next to me, and I will, and I tell myself right before I go to sleep, I'm going to wake up with the headline. And that happens more often than not.
Love it. So and, you've got the new product coming out, Sleep Your Way to Riches.
Well, it's been done before. People like David Ogilvy, pay attention to American advertising. If you've seen Mad Men on AMC, the advertising show, sitcom, I don't know if you guys are getting it down here, but that's all about the mid-60s. That's David Ogilvy. They mentioned David Ogilvy a lot. David Ogilvy wrote Confessions of an Ad Man in the late 50s. He's a god to advertising copywriters. And he used to use sleep a lot, too, and he picked it up from guys even earlier on. So it's not I didn't make this up. This is a process that has been used by people who have to do creative stuff all the time. And when I say creative, I'm not talking about like Picasso creative. I'm talking about writing creative, which means taking nothing, starting with essentially a blank piece of paper and a job to sell something and coming up with a sales message that actually gets the job done. So it's a different kind of creativity than you might think about with the artist living in Soho with the beret and the, you know, the paint splattered.
Well,
you know,
for what it's worth, I'm pretty sure that Einstein and Sir Isaac Newton used exactly the same method. Have a good sleep about it.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, another completely separate question here. What makes a top copywriter? Like, what is the real difference? How would you know that someone is a top copywriter versus just an average one?
Well, those are actually two different questions. So let's take the second one. How would you be able to tell, say, you're trying to hire somebody or not?
Yeah.
Almost impossible to tell if you don't understand the process yourself.
Right, so that, you're a huge advocate for people learning copywriting themselves, aren't you? I know that's one of
course,
your core
even
messages.
Even if you never use it yourself, even if you always outsource it, if you don't know what they're doing, you're not going to know if they wrote a good ad. You're not going to know if it's going to work or not. You're not going to know where the weak points are or not. If it works, you're not going to know why it worked. If it doesn't work, you're not going to know why it doesn't work. And you're completely at the mercy of someone else to meet their deadline writing stuff for you. You know, people listening to this, get straight on this. Everybody at the top of the game at every single market across the board, when the chips are down, they can write their own sales message. Most of them do. Kern didn't hire that stuff out. Andy doesn't hire that stuff out. Walker doesn't hire that stuff out. They do it themselves. They may have writers write a lot of the stuff for them. They may have writers doing some of their social media. You know, a lot of people that use, you know, daily blog posts, they may actually get somebody to try to mimic their voice and get them some things gone. But when the push comes to shove, and it's really important, they're going to write it themselves. Evan Pagan writes his own stuff. Just right down the line. They all learned it. They figured it out. It was the big breakthrough that changed everything for them, and it opened everything up. It's the fundamental skill. I was just talking with Rich Sheffern today of Strategic Profits, and he was talking about what changed his life was, you know, listening to me talk one time at a seminar and telling him about, you know, nothing gets done until the copy is written. And a lot of people don't understand that, but basically you can have all the tech. You can have a building that you own full of the staff that you're paying with all the modern technology, all the computers, everybody's geared up. And if you don't know how to get the copy written, you are dead in the water. You're toast. You can't make a move in marketing until the sales pitch gets written. So why in the world would you leave that to someone else? And a lot of people think of it as a vendor thing. They'll go to Elance.com or something and try to get the lowest bidder, and it's like, oh yeah, it's like, oh my God, we got the domain name, we got the product done, everything's it's set to mail, we got all this stuff. We forgot to write the web page. We better get somebody really quick, the lowest bidder, to jam something out an hour and a half so we can sell this thing. You know, nah, it doesn't work that way.
I'm gonna just jump in there and say, yeah, I'm totally sold on that concept as well. And since we met, not even a year ago, I think sometime around June last year or July, the second time, the first time you fobbed me off a bit, but that's all right. We got past that.
Well, I didn't know who
but
you
the,
were.
The, you know, I this year to date already, I've generated more than $500,000, and I'd have to say that that's because I've paid a lot more attention to my message and crafting that message. And I went right through your kick butt folder and your Simple Writing System folder, and I've been fortunate enough to back and forth emails with you on a fairly regular basis. And I've even worked myself up to, I even tried on an exclamation mark today and I got away with it, but I know I'm never going to be qualified for that.
Well, you know what? You know, now that you've gotten this far and you learned how to write a basic, you know, sales message out and how to start to communicate with people on a deeper level, can you even imagine trying to exist without that knowledge now?
It's I can't imagine it. And you know, just to give a tangible example that anyone listening to this MP3 would be able to relate to, is that I can send out a quick little email to my customers and ask them to make, you know, to ask a question to ask you. And we still had over 100 comments in, you know, in about 10 or 12 hours.
And to you be able sold to, them on the process.
Just to be able to get a result like that is absolutely critical, because then you can build upon that and you can use it over and over again.
Yep.
I'm going
to
ask
And just to finish that thought, this is very, very important. When I, you know, sometimes people's eyes roll back in their head when I say all the top guys use this, you know, know how to write their own stuff. They think, yeah, but they're using some other video or something. Here's the bottom line. If you get a room full of really successful people, you can ask them, and I've done this before, and I ask them to raise their hands, how many people have built a successful business and then lost everything through divorce? Somebody embezzled all the money, they were forced into bankruptcy by some technology change, something happened, maybe they just, it was a gimmick and it went bad, and most of the room will raise their hand. And then I'll ask them, what helped you get back in? And they all, to a man and a woman, they will say, I knew how to sell. So you can have everything taken away from you, everything, all of your technology, everything. Your computer, you can be left, as I like to say, buck naked in a cornfield somewhere outside of Brisbane. Do they have corn in Brisbane?
They have sugar cane.
And, okay, in a sugar cane field. As long as you can, you know, either verbally use your sales skills or get to a pencil and paper, you know, even that dirty bar napkin, and scribble something out and start to write the stuff out, you can start to rebuild immediately. And in fact, if you can, you know, if you know how to do all this stuff, you don't need anybody else. You don't need to go hire a writer. You don't need to have somebody else figure it out. You know, as soon as you get your hands on technology again, a cheap computer at a coffee shop, you know, wireless, you know, where you can actually get back in and start emailing people and start working up, you're back on the path to making it all back and more. It's the one skill they can't take away from you ever.
That's it. It's in your head. Frank just did a $2 million plus launch saying that the fundamental thing you need is to build lists. And what skill was he using to put together that $2 million campaign and to build his list of 100,000 people in a few weeks? Right. It was sales writing. It was the copywriting.
All the way down, yeah.
Okay, I love it. Okay, here's sort of a...
Okay, we're on like question four now, I think.
It's not as if we're not coming up with some good points here, John. I think, you know, the funny thing is, out of 100 questions, I reckon you're covering off almost all of them with your comments, because it's a lot of the same things. Here's another one. Tell me if we've already covered this, but is there a next big trend in copywriting?
No, I would say without sounding mean spirited, that's the wrong question. Copywriting hasn't changed since people learned how to write. People knew how to sell before there was the written word. I literally caveman. I talk about a caveman upgrading to a cave with a view in exchange for a slab of mastodon, you know, meat. There was a sales process going on. There were used chariot salesmen in ancient Rome. The process of writing, of copyright, is selling, is salesmanship in print. And video is salesmanship on video. You usually go through print to get there. It all comes down to the basic set of skills. Old school classic salesmanship, knowing how to present your case to somebody that gets their attention, kind of wakes them up, makes them realize that, yeah, what you got is what they want or need. You're the guy they want to deal with, and yeah, they want it right now. That's the process. So there is no next big thing. I mean, I think the writer may have been thinking that NLP was a big thing. It's not. might have thought that you know, Twitter and AdWords. Old school copywriters, when we first saw AdWords, we immediately all said the same thing. This is haiku. This is short form prose or poetry, where you just have to learn the medium. You know, James, I'm getting off of Twitter now, and I'm moving over almost exclusively to Facebook. I like the interaction better. I like the idea of things not getting lost in that Twitter stream. But very soon after I started writing in Twitter, I would start writing an end, and I'd be right at 140 characters. So it was because I have experience in this, I trained my mind to think in 140 characters. That's the right count, isn't it? 140.
So what you're saying, it's not really the medium or the platform. It's still the same skill. You can package it a million ways. And one of my mentors taught me that humans haven't really changed that much in the last 3,000 years.
Try 3 million. Yeah. One of the things I like to say to stir up audiences when I talk is that a lot of people say we're just one step out of the jungle. You know, civilization is a veneer for really, you know, someone one step out of the jungle. And I like to say, the heck with that. We got 1 foot firmly planted in the jungle. You know, it's you know, when people say it's a jungle out there, they're not kidding. The basic things that drive people, that emotionally drive people, are still fear and greed. Now that when I start talking about salesmanship to people, and James, I have to say this, it's almost like a disclaimer. Salesmen lead better lives, not because they make more money, but because they are more aware. They're not sleepwalking through life, and the reason they're not sleepwalking through life is because you can't sell and sleepwalk at the same time. Selling means becoming aware of how humans actually do things, not what they say they're going to do, not what they wish they were going to do, or not what they tell you they're going to do. It's what they actually do. There's a huge difference there. And by understanding how people actually behave and how they actually go through things, then you start to realize that, you know, a lot of the way people think about themselves and think about the human race and think about interaction and society and civilization and advertising and marketing and stuff, it's all illusion. It all gets down to, you know, people will tell you they bought something for a nice rational reason, but the real reason was almost always emotional, and we are very out of touch with that stuff. So when I say fear and greed still drives it, I'm not thinking of greed or fear necessarily as a bad thing. I'm not putting a value judgment on it. I am telling you how I've observed after 30 years how people actually act. And again, it's not greed like, oh, give me, I get mine, and you don't get yours. It's greed in that way that, you know, if you had a choice of you or your neighbor actually scoring big in the stock market, you'd rather it was you. And once you start to realize that this is, and that decision means that you can actually start to play on their fear that it's not just greed that it's them and not you, but also their fear that it's going to be them before it's you. So these kind of things make people act as opposed to think and ponder and get wax philosophical about it. How people act are down to some basic emotionally laden behaviors that go all the way back to the earliest anthropoids. So
your system helps people tap into that.
Yeah, that's my terrier in the background barking.
He's agreeing, obviously. He said yes, absolutely.
He agrees very much. Yes, let me just finish that thought about salesmen leading better lives. People sometimes get scared about the idea that they're going to hate people if they learn how to sell, or selling is going to make them somehow less attractive, or it's going to make them less good of a person. And the opposite happens. As you become a salesman, as you start to look at people how really act rather than how they say they're going to act, or you see the world as it is rather than how you wish it was or think it should be, which is idealism, and I hate idealism. Once you get down to reality, it's better. You actually love people more because there's no illusions there. There's no scales on your eyes. There's no trying to change the world because you don't like the way it is right there. It's like embrace it. It's a very Zen way of living, and it's much easier. And there's more love. There's more gorgeousness when you go outside. I mean, it's just you feel things. You're more aware. It's just the illusion drops away. So I like to make that point because I encounter this a lot. People are afraid of selling. You know this from, you know, when you mentioned that, you know, your car selling background, you know, some people actually recoil a bit. It's like, I could never do that. Well, you know what? It's, you're providing a service. If you weren't there, people wouldn't have their Mercedes. You
well,
know,
people would make bad choices.
They'd make bad choices.
Exactly. I might throw in the definition that I used to think of selling as the process of change from one situation to a better alternative situation. That was how I looked at it. That's a problem solving perspective.
Yep.
The way I look at it, if people buy solutions that I put out there, it means that they've made a decision because they feel they'll be better off, and I can feel good about that. So maybe that will help someone who's listening to this feel good about selling.
Well, you should, because that's the system we're in. If you're in business and you have a problem with the idea of selling, you shouldn't be in business. Because you're not, and you won't be very soon, too. So I'm not being coy about this. Salesmen lead better lives, and it comes down to the Zen awareness of what is actually going on, and it makes the world prettier, and it makes people more lovable, not less. So that's the point I'd like to make.
All right, let's shift gears into a different thing here. You've had more than 30 years experience in this. What is the biggest single mistake that you see people make when they're writing copy?
Not understanding. It's interesting. You say that, because it's the first step of this little express course that we do. It's not understanding what's going on in the head of the prospect. Most people talk at other people. You do it in your social life. You do it when you try to market. You do it all the way down the line. You can't do that when you're trying to sell something. You're trying to make a sales transaction happen. You have to join the conversation already in his head. We call it a message to market match. It's this whole idea of understanding what their attitude is. I'd say most businessmen and people who have a service, they don't just talk at their customers. They try to bludgeon their customers. It's like, look, what I got is really good. You need this right now. I can't believe you don't have it. And of course, what they get is the prospect turns and runs away. And what they should be doing is using influence and persuasion, which is very much the opposite of trying to bludgeon someone into agreeing with you, and rather join that conversation in their head so that they actually realize that, again, and I'm like a broken record, but again, they say, you know what? What you've got is I think I want that. I think you're the guy I want to deal with because I trust you and I see you as a resource. And you know what? You're right. I need to do this right now. So,
I've just learned something in our interview today. For the first time, I've just become aware of this, and I'm not sure if you do this on purpose or not, because I interview a lot of people, and I just want to point this out loud. You do something peculiar, and this is why it's like herding a cat trying to get a short answer from a John Carlton, because most people, when I ask a question, they give me the answer, but what you do, whether consciously or not, you tell me the answer. And then you qualify why with reasons, and then you give me examples and metaphors so that it's locked in. Have we sort of stumbled across a John Carlton secret formula here?
Maybe. It's a secret. Okay. It's all part of persuasion. Once you start to realize, once you do the process once, and you do it critically, you look and you don't say, hey, I made a sale. You say, I made a sale. Interesting. What did I say differently this time? Or what clicked? And if you don't know, you can go back to the guy and say, hey, I'm really glad you made the sale. Why did you buy? What actually flipped you? And often you'll get answers that will astonish you. The person will say, well, you know, price was an issue, but you covered that really easily, and I don't mind paying more because you told me that at X. And you might have mentioned X, but you didn't think about it, and you may not have mentioned it to someone.
It's a great point there in asking your audience. I like to ask them before, especially with product creation. I like to ask them afterwards and then incorporate that message back into it.
Sorry about those beeps, folks. I'm on a line with a call waiting, so I apologize for that. But again, this is real theater. This is theater. This is how things actually happen.
We're in the jungle. In fact, you just popped it in there ever so gently, but you talked about express training. One of my questions was, firstly, a compliment. Totally loving your simple writing express training. Thanks for being so generous. And here's the question. So this is two parts. Firstly, I want you to explain what express training actually is, but I'm going to ask you this question anyway. There's a lot of noise and options in today's competitive marketplace for info products. So what are the key steps that you advise your clients to take that they can craft their USPs and to powerfully differentiate their offers in the minds of their target audience?
Well, interesting you say that. The first two steps of this little three-step mini course full of three shortcuts from the Simple Writing System, which we call the Express Course. Express meaning it's very, very quick, covers that very thing. Lesson number one actually talks about we call it the bar conversation, and it's the quickest way to teach people how to get into the head of your prospect and understand what's going on in his head rather than what's going on in your head. And this actually changes people's lives. And the video is 5 minutes long. And then lesson two, I believe, which may be closer to 9 minutes, is about describing who you are, what we call the elevator chat. So it teams up. And in there, I didn't talk about it, but it answers the question. It is pretty much the USP, the why you and not someone else, being able to very, very briefly explain to someone what the essence of who you are and what you've got and why it's the best deal and why it should all come down now. So people get lost in this. There are books and books and books written on USP, which goes back to Rosser Reeves, I guess, who was talking about the unique selling proposition. That's what USP stands for originally. And that what he was talking about was selling cigarettes. So it was like, you know, smoke Lucky Strikes, they're smoother. So, you know, they're smoother became the unique selling proposition. So a lot of people get mixed up because that doesn't translate so well into the modern world. So I changed it a bit to try to help people understand. So for me, USP stands for positioning yourself uniquely in order to sell. And by position, I mean positioning yourself uniquely in your market. So among your competition, in the minds of the person you're going after, all of this stuff. Position yourself uniquely in your market in order to sell. Of course, that as an acronym, that's PUS, PUS, and that doesn't go over very well. So I still call it the USP, but I redid it because now you understand you're in a crowded market. There's no reason somebody should really pay attention to you unless you let them know what it is. So you position yourself as either the cheapest, the best, or the most interesting, or the guy who tells the best stories, or just the guy who everybody else is going to, you know, the number one first choice resource of everyone else, you know, whenever they need something. So you position yourself uniquely. So if there's someone else who's making those same claims, you keep changing your claims until you are absolutely unique. You may be the oldest guy again, or, you know, again, you may be the cheapest, or you may be the most interesting, you know, and you position yourself in a way that they can't copy. But you're keeping in mind that being unique doesn't close the deal. To close the deal, you have to be able to sell. So you position yourself uniquely in a way where the conversation is very focused and very targeted to solving the problems inside the prospect's head. So again, the broken record thing, he says, you know what? What you got is what I want, and I think I want to deal with you, and let's do this now.
Love it.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Got time for a couple more?
I think I was just going to say, I think we're about ready to wind up, aren't we? I will take one more, but I want to make sure that people understand how urgent it is they get over to this, you know, to this Express course we're doing. The first two, we've moved on from lesson one. Lesson two is still up there. And the main thing is the fact that I and my faculty of the Simple Writing System, who are all top-notch professional writers, are getting feedback in here. I figured what there was in the first one. There was over 400 comments, multiple threads. These are, you know, when you look at the comments to these lessons, it's not short little, hey, good job, or that really helped me, or that was interesting. No, these are long, drawn-out threads, back and forth, interactive feedback, advice from professional writers. getting in there and diving in. And what's interesting about this is that you couldn't get this kind of attention from pro writers without spending a small fortune outside of this. Here, it's all free. You go there. That's why we're getting so much buzz on this thing. Nobody's ever done this before. Nobody has the capacity to do this because I've got this faculty full of hot writers who know how to teach, love teaching, are committed to teaching and sharing. We're not holding anything back, and it's a coaching, it's a mentoring feast going on in there. So, and we're just about to move from lesson two to lesson three. So if you get in, I believe, depending on when you post this, you can still get into lesson two, but certainly by lesson three, you can still, you know, take advantage of the opportunity to possibly get some feedback and advice from real writers who know how to teach this stuff.
Okay, cool. Well, okay, if we've got one more question, then what I'll do is I'll help it aid the cause here. And that would be, have you got any particularly powerful take action phrases that cause people to take action on a website? So, you know, have you tested any that you get a great response for? Maybe you could use it in a sentence that tells people to take action on the Simple Writing System as an example.
Well, it's not so much words, but it's phrases. And, you know, sometimes the phrases that work for me or work for certain people don't work for everybody. So there is no magic to this. But you need to know the language of getting people, of influencing people to act. And one of the best things that I've talked about, of course, is just addressing over and over again the opportunity, the idea of opportunity, the concept of opportunity. Most people go through their lives thinking, if I don't take this opportunity, there'll be another one along shortly. And once you're experienced, once you've been around the block as many times as I have, you realize you maybe get two or three opportunities in your life that are worth anything. And they don't announce themselves with thunder and lightning and, you know, a neon sign, opportunity here, you know, jump on board, you know, and this magic train comes by. No, they are often whispers in the wind that if you're not attuned to it, if you haven't told yourself, I'm looking for opportunity, I'm ready to hear what's going on, it will pass you by. The majority of people out there who are grumbling and frustrated about their lives and think, you know, the other guys are lucky because things happen to them or they happen to be in the right place at the right time, things like that. Nonsense. The people who take advantage of this attune themselves. I was 32 before I finally said, you know what, I'm going to be open for opportunity. I'm going to look for opportunity. I'm going to actively become involved in opportunity when it comes. And one of the first opportunities that happened to me was I stumbled on the book Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. I had no understanding of goals. I didn't know you could want something. And I especially didn't know that you could make a plan to go get it, and then you were allowed to go get it. That was alien to me. I was 32 years old. I came from very, very humble background. At that time, I was sleeping on somebody's couch. I was homeless. You know, my life, you know, continually fell apart because I didn't know I could actually want something, plan to go get it, and then implement the plan. It just changed everything for me. And that was an opportunity. And that would have, I can't tell you how many people I have gotten to read that book and told them exactly what to look for and what happened to me and how it changed my life. And they'll read it and they'll, you know, and their eyes will roll up in their head and they'll say, you were lucky. You know, no, luck had nothing to do with it. I went out, I grasped things. So when I talk about, a lot of people say this is a great opportunity. People don't understand opportunity. They understand the word, and they have a vague notion of the concept, but they aren't putting it into action. Most people that you're talking about in your market, and I can say that across the board, have never grabbed an opportunity in their lives. They have had multiple opportunities go by. They have either not recognized them, not paid attention to them, or not jumped on them, certainly not engaged with them to the full effect that was available there. So they don't understand. I mean, they hear about it all the time. It goes in one ear and out the other. This is an opportunity. A lot of people say that in their ads. Well, it might be. It might be the best opportunity that your prospect has ever had in his life. But if he doesn't understand it in a language and in a way that is emotionally meaningful to him, that hits him in his sweet spot of need, then it's going to go the way of all the other opportunities in life. But it's going to kind of whisk away. Other shiny object will pop up, and he'll wander off, and it's gone. So So, you know, it depends on the market. It depends on the people you're talking to. It depends on how you're phrasing everything. It depends on everything. But my favorite thing is to really try to kind of drive home. Now, I drive people away talking about this. I'm sure a couple of people, their eyes rolled up in their head listening to this. You know, they're thinking, yeah, I heard that, you know, whatever, opportunity, blah, blah, blah. Well, fine. But all the people that I know who are successful, and I hang out with a lot of successful people, it wasn't blah, 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 yeah, I know it. It was like, you know what, I think you're right. And, you know, and an opportunity does mean something, and let's get going. And the next time they came across an opportunity, they jumped on it. Or they examined it, and maybe it wasn't that one, but they were alert to it. Because, again, opportunity doesn't often announce itself. It will come, you know, like a whisper in the breeze. Just and if you're not attuned, you're not going to hear it.
Cool.
Does that make sense?
It does. So if we could sort of encapsulate that and say, what phrase would you say to people who have registered an interest in learning about copywriting to compel them to order the Simple Writing System from James?
What the phrase would be, what more are you waiting for? You have proof laid out in front of you in bucket loads. You have people you respect, resources telling you this is what they use, this is what their the highest possible recommendation. It's like, what are you waiting for? Nobody's going to hit you over the head if you don't do it. Your life will not change if you don't do it. And that sometimes is comforting to people, James. People are afraid of change. So, you know, your life will change if you do this. Warning, this stuff should come with a huge warning sticker. Your life will change if you learn this.
Wow,
and by change,
I'm just going to jump in there. The headline on my sales video for my live workshop, the one that you're coming to in September, actually, as well, it was warning, this course will change your life.
Yeah.
And we had 220 people, and they all say exactly the same thing. We had 200 testimonials saying that it was an amazing workshop.
Right. And, you know, you're not going to convince 100% of the people to do anything ever. People are categorically opposed to change and to taking action. Even if, I mean, if you're on a desert island, if you find somebody who's been on a desert island, starved, wanting to get off, and you show up with a boat and say, hop into the boat and I'll take you somewhere else. They'll say, I don't know, is that boat leaky? Are you sure we're going to get to somewhere that's better than here? I don't want to do anything that's going to make it worse, you know. And that's the way most people kind of act. They know the little island they're on, and as much as they say they want to get off it, they're really loath to make a change, to make that effort. That small percentage that will change, though, that's the ones. There's enough of them out there to make you wealthy in, you know, many different endeavors and many different markets and many different ways. So you're not trying to connect with the most stubborn and the most mired in their, you know, in their sleepwalking life. You want to find the people who are ready to be woken up, who are close enough to understand that this is an opportunity. And you know, again, it's, you know, not everybody is ready for their life to change. They're for whatever reason, they may dream about changing their life, but really it's going to take some action, and those are the people that you're after. So that if you can convince those few people who in your market who are ready to take, you know, ready to take that first step towards a new life, you know, and you've made it vivid in their head that this is the way to go, that's the way to do it. So
thank you. That's great way to end. You've been super generous again. I know I could ask you questions for the next few days. It's such a treat to have John Carlton on the line asking questions. Was there a question in there that stood out for you? I want to reward someone for the best question, and you get to pick it. Which question challenged you the most, or do you think was the most pertinent given the topic?
Well, I think we went off on the first one. I forget the exact way he phrased it, but that kind of nailed it, I think. He was asking, you know, he asked about NLP, and I kind of smacked him down, but it was good to get that out there. And he asked about, you know, a couple of other, I forget the exact things he said, but.
Cool. I'm gonna send him a $1,000 course as a little thank you.
Ooh.
So,
sweet.
All right. Well,
he owes me now.
Well, I'm looking forward to the Simple Writing System training again. It's a fantastic thing. It's certainly the best investment in terms of time and energy for the output that you get. Thank you so much. I hope you'll join us again another time. And I look forward to getting into those free lessons that you're giving away right now.
Yeah, dive in now. Now's the time to do it. So thanks, James. Always a pleasure talking with you. And you should tell people, too, that you and I have an email correspondence where I have slowly been getting you to actually put entire thoughts into an email as opposed to little texting snippets. So the growth that you've had has been phenomenal, and you're continuing to do it. And it's more fun when you get into this, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It's a challenge. And, I think I'm mindful when I'm sending you an email that, sending it to someone that's pretty clued into this stuff, I actually have to put more thought. But it'd be very hard to argue that that's not transferring across to my other stuff. And I've been watching my open rates and my click-throughs, and I can tell you that categorically that it has changed my life. And every time I listen to my son rock out a Led Zeppelin tune on his guitar, I remember that you told me to buy him a guitar, that the big point is stop thinking about it, just start doing it. That's my phrase, my call to action. Just do it. Just get into it. Don't hold back. Just get straight into it. It'll make a big difference in the short-term future and a massive difference in the long-term.
And you have an opportunity here to have people watch your back and who are experienced and help you along. You're not alone. If you take advantage of this opportunity, you don't have to do this alone. You got somebody else watching your back who knows how to teach all the way down the line. So there's a lot of reasons to get involved. One of the best is you don't have to do this alone. You don't have to try to make up things from scratch. You can actually get involved and have some fun with it, be around other people who are having the same kind of fun, life-changing experience that you're having, and the networking possibilities that are there are phenomenal. It's a way to join a ride that right now is only dust in the distance to you, and you can be on that train yourself. So